Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, are you tired of choosing between lower energy costs and feeling comfortable in your home? I have a neighbor who's in that kind of situation where I usually wear a coat when I go over to see them because they keep it really cold and they complain about it all the time. But there are some things I can do about it, and I hope they're listening in. As a matter of fact, today, Larry Mueller here again for the Ideas Network. Our guests with me in the studio, Chad Spate. Chad, good to see you again.
Thanks, Larry. Always great to be here.
He owns Chad's Design Build of Madison and Monona. Also in the studio, Christy Weber. Hi, Christy.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
She is the project design manager for TDS Design Team in Madison, specializes in passive homes, net zero, and high-performance homes. So what would you like to know about making your home more comfortable? Are you using passive house elements? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Christy, what are passive houses?
Well, passive houses use a lot less energy than your average house built to code. They even do a better job than like Wisconsin Green Build Home or some of the LEED homes. And they also provide a higher level of comfort inside the home. There's all sorts of other qualities about a passive house that are sort of the intangible qualities, like it's quieter, the air feels better. But I do like to focus on the energy efficiency first and foremost. And utilizing a series of strategies is really the way to get there. So we take a conservation approach.
Okay.
Really good amount of, like a super level of insulation, great level of air tightness, excellent doors and windows. We're looking at things like triple pane. We're also using the sun's energy to heat the houses as much as possible, but not relying on it solely. And then, of course, when you have a house with such low loads, you're using often an alternative heating and cooling system because you don't need a traditional furnace. And you have a really tight house, so you need to be able to breathe and have clean, fresh, filtered air in that house. So air-to-air heat exchangers typically used.
And a net zero house, what is that? What is net zero?
So net zero, you know, getting there can mean different things to different people. But in general, it means that you use no more energy. You're basically using zero energy. So that can be accomplished in a couple of different ways. I like to use the conservation approaches that Passive House has kind of put together. So reducing the amount of energy you're using first, and then a small amount of solar panels can get you to net zero. Now, there are other areas of the world that you may be able to achieve closer to net zero just because of the climate, but we're in Wisconsin, so we have a harsher climate, so we need to think about that a little bit more. There are some folks who, you know, you can technically do a code-built house and sort of plaster a lot of solar panels on the top of the house and make it a net zero house. But I really like sort of the other qualities that passive house provides in addition to energy efficiency. And it really is going to be about resilience into our future as the energy grid sort of faces, you know, overabundance and issues and things, you know, having blackouts and stuff like that.
For sure. Well, Chad, you've worked with this kind of design in your work?
A little bit. We have certainly helped many of our clients significantly reduce the amount of energy that they have to use to keep the home comfortable. But getting to a passive house standard isn't something that we've done.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's, you know, I think in some regard it may make a difference where you live. If you're in a city like Madison with a tremendous number of trees that are higher than the house and may block solar, for example, or may block the sun's entrance into the windows of your home, that makes it harder.
Yeah, but the beauty of the package of passive house is that you can utilize additional insulation to sort of offset that lack of sun. Whereas in the old days, you know, in the 1970s, we talked about passive solar. If you didn't have the sun, the house wasn't functioning the way you intended.
Yeah.
But now we have these other strategies sort of combined together to make one complete package.
So my house has a geothermal unit, and it's dense packed, and I think on each level there was even a stronger, I forget what it is now, some sort of foam situation that made it tighter yet. And so my house is pretty darn comfortable. And I can feel comfortable in that home, actually, just compare it to a neighbor, for example. The temperature could be the same in my house that it is in their house, but mine still feels more comfortable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Does that make any sense at all?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's all about what the temperature of your walls are, you know, and your windows as well, which are often the cold spot in your wall. So if you're standing next to a wall that's 55 degrees, but the air temperature is 68, that's going to feel a lot different than if your wall is 66 degrees with an air temperature of 68.
Yeah.
And that's probably what you're experiencing in your home, is lack of drafts and lack of cold spots in your wall.
Yeah, there aren't any drafts that I can feel for sure. William in Fond du Lac and Mike in Milwaukee both have some questions relating to this, I believe. Let's go to William in Fond du Lac. Hi, William.
Yes, good morning. Excuse me. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I noticed in new home construction that there is an outside air duct bringing in makeup air. Usually goes to the furnace return line. And I'm sure that's cold because everybody's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if an air-to-air heat exchanger will take that duct's place, or if the code would require both.
You want to start?
Sure. William, thanks for the call and the question. It's a great question. So in Wisconsin, we do not require a air-to-air heat exchanger or energy exchanger. But often, just best practice for heating and cooling the home and for having reasonable air quality is to have that makeup air come in. And so kind of the low-cost, low-tech way to do that is to simply, as you observed, bring in some fresh air into the return duct plenum of the furnace, and then draw that air in and condition it, and then, you know, recirculate the air throughout the house. And the idea is that there are vents in the home. For example, when a dryer is running, it's pulling air out of the dryer and the house and exhausting it out the sidewall. Bathroom fans are exhausting air out of the house. All of those exhaust fans create negative pressure in the home. And whenever you take air out of a sealed compartment or a reasonably sealed compartment, it's going to pull air in through all the little cracks and crevices. And since most of our homes are not particularly that well sealed, that air gets pulled in. As we've made houses tighter, we've had to put in this makeup air. So the air exchanger is just a much more high-tech way to do it, because it's actually helping to preheat or pre-cool the outside air using the exhaust of the inside air. And it doesn't actually mix the air, but it allows it to go through an exchanger where, you know, the heat is transferred.
So the pipe, so it's essentially there's kind of maybe two pipes that are running right next to each other, and the heat from the air that's going out of the house is warming up the air that's coming in.
Correct. Exactly. That would be a way to think of it. And it's almost like a honeycomb sort of design.
Okay.
And so all these little cavities, you know, the exhaust air is passing through those, and then through it's often a metal fin. You know, that heat will transfer, and
it does a pretty good job too. I mean, it's not
correct
as far as
I mean, it's not uncommon to see energy recovery ventilators or heat recovery ventilators in the zone of, you know, 85% efficient.
Yeah. So there you go. Thank you so much for that call. I appreciate it very much, William. Mike in Milwaukee, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Mike.
Well, good morning. I'm buying new windows for the house, and I heard a term that I don't recognize called low E for the windows.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea what that is. Could you please explain it?
Sure. Great question, Mike. So low E, E stands for emissivity. Thank you. I always
emissivity. Okay.
That's the my Achilles heel here on the show. I always botch that word. It basically has to do with the amount of heat transfer through the glass, and so we are trying to reduce the amount of solar gain with that glass coating. And that is really important if our goal is to, you know, prevent a home from becoming too hot when often the southern or the western sun is shining on the glass. We actually will strategically place different coatings on different windows when we're really trying to knock it out of the park in building or renovating a home. So that we might, and then other things, of course, have to do with shading. So if you have a window that can be shaded so that in the summer months or the warmer months, the sun does not shine into the glass, but then in the winter when the sun is lower in the sky, it is able to shine, then we would put a different coating potentially on the glass so that we can actually have the solar gain.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's going on.
Yeah. When you see a low E, what is there a good number or a good a good way to look at it, Christy?
Well, I don't know that there are different low E coatings with different values, but certainly windows have different U values, which is like the R value for insulation.
Okay.
So it's the insulating value. So when you look at windows, a U value, the lower the better in terms of the ability to stop the heat transfer, either from cold, your heat from the inside moving out to the cold in the winter or the opposite in the summer. What Chad mentioned, the solar heat gain coefficient, is really actually quite important to us here in Wisconsin. In the southern climates, where they're predominantly cooling focused, having a low solar heat gain coefficient is good. You want to reflect the heat away as much as possible. But in Wisconsin, we would like to be able to use that if we can.
Yeah.
It really depends on your specific situation, which way the window is facing, how much solar gain you're getting in there, whether or not you have shading, as Chad talked about. So on the north side, you might say, well, I'm never going to get any sun coming through this window.
Mm-hmm.
So I really want to focus on, you know, U value as much as possible. But on the south side, you could say, well, I want to get a higher solar heat gain coefficient than what is typically found in a window off the shelf. And then you don't want to overheat in the summer, so use shading elements like an overhang. That's the most common. That's what mm-hmm. we've seen historically. That's one part of why we've had overhangs, that and the ability to shed water off of a house. But there's also some different fun architectural things that you can do, and you can do that in new construction and existing construction. It might be a beautifully designed trellis that sort of breaks up, you know, what otherwise would have been a boring facade of your house. So there's all sorts of creative ways that you can work with windows and shading elements together to sort of create a system.
So in Mike's case, here in sitting in Milwaukee, he wants to look, if he wants to look at values or a number or anything, the U?
I would focus on the U value. That is the lower the better in terms of U value.
And so what's a good low number?
I think what we're seeing with like a lot of common windows is somewhere in the 0.23, 0.28 range. Sometimes you're looking at 0.3, 0.32. Passive house windows or like a really good triple pane window, you might get down to 1.18, something like that. But those are the common values that we're seeing.
And does it make a big difference? I mean, a 0.18 or 1.18 versus a 2.8?
It depends, right? So if you have an existing house and you have well-insulated walls, but it's an existing house. It's 2x4 walls with, let's say, dense-packed cellulose insulation or something. It may not make sense to go up to a triple-pane window because you're putting, like, a Corvette window, you know, in sort of a Pontiac wall. So you want to sort of equalize those things. And triple-pane windows are definitely more expensive, so that would be the main reason not to go quite that far.
So, Mike, there you go. I hope that – does that help?
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Visiting today with Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Design Build, and Christy Weber, project design manager for TDS Design Team of Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our engineer today, Jill Nadeau, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at home improvement today, we've zeroed in today on keeping your home comfortable in these cold weather conditions. Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build of Monona and Madison, Christy Weber, she's on the design team for TDS Custom Construction. So great to have both of them with us today. Certainly, if you have a question, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Please join in. John in Mount Horeb will give you a chance. Now, hi, John. Thanks for calling.
You bet. Thank you. I have a question about heating a cooler portion of our house, a cooler room. We live out in the country, and we have propane heat in our furnace. And I'm wondering about adding a small supplementary propane space heater in that room. And the reason I'm especially interested in asking about this is our daughter lives in Chicago, and they installed a supplementary natural gas heater, and it's not even vented outside. And I'm just wondering, I'm a little suspicious of that, but is that something that is a good idea in our climate or not, if it's a space heater like that is not vented?
Whoa, Chad's mate, what do you think?
Yeah, well, so John, thanks for the call. It's a great question. So my typical response to that would be any combustion appliance needs to be vented, typically. And yet, you think about, you know, we have gas stoves and ovens, and, you know, they're not directly vented to the outside, but there is typically a vent over the appliance, so that little bit of carbon monoxide that is going to be generated when you burn natural gas or propane will be vented to the outside. So there's always a danger. Generally, we say, you know, you don't operate, for example, a gas or a propane grill inside your home for exactly that reason. It's dangerous. And most of these appliances have some sort of venting precaution. So my basic response would be that you have to make sure that whatever the appliance is professionally installed to the code. Typically, the code is going to speak to this issue. So that would be my somewhat convoluted answer, maybe.
Yeah, well, it would make me nervous.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it, Christy?
Absolutely. I mean, there's studies out there that show that combustion fuels inside a home are not healthy for you, and they especially have impact on children and potential for causing asthma and other respiratory illnesses. So that's something I would definitely be looking into and considering the safety of that.
Yeah. Something to think about, John. Thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Paul in Appleton next. Give you a chance. Hi, Paul.
Hello, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm driving back from Stockton and just got done working on an old envelope home where they had a mile of glass facing the south and, you know, built in 79-80. Just to kind of insert a couple of ideas up here to make a zero energy home. We take old homes, take off everything on the exterior, completely air seal, and add up to 8 inches of recycled foam on the outside. and then put the siding all back on, maybe new windows. It depends on the customer. And then what we use to create fresh air flow is what's called the Lunos system, sold out of, I believe, Massachusetts. But these heat recovery units, you have to have minimal two for a small home, and it depends on the size of your home. But they do the same thing as a large ventilating heat recovery system. They breathe out on one side of the house while the other one's breathing in, and then they reverse every 70 seconds. And that way you're locking the heat in and still getting fresh air.
Hmm. It is, Christy, it looked to me like you were are familiar with that system.
I've read about them, and I've seen them online, and I've never actually used them or met anyone who has. So I'm very curious to hear about how they're functioning, if you have any comparison to sort of a standard ERV. And I've heard that sometimes you can actually hear outside sounds more easily. Would you say that's true?
This is true because it is directly through the wall. If you're on a busy street, like my house is, we can, if you're in that room, you can hear the muffled street traffic. In summertime, it's not an issue because we just stop running those because we like our windows open. But in wintertime, when sound is heightened because of lack of foliage and stuff like that, you can hear that. So if someone had, you know, issues with outside noises, that's true. We don't seem to notice it in our kitchen. And I have not heard people that have had me redo their homes. They have not had any issues with the sound. But, you know, it depends on the person.
Sure.
I did write a whole blog about it on 475, the company that sells them. So the number 475 written out, 475, they sell them. But I did write a blog, and then also I wrote a four-part blog on greenbuildingadvisor.com all about that system.
Well, Paul, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Something else to look at there for sure. Appreciate it. Steve in Rubicon, we'll go to you next. Hi, Steve.
Hi, I've got a question on inside storms. The subject keeps coming up, and I've got an old farmhouse, and I can definitely feel the coldness from the windows, and the windows are not necessarily in horrible shape. It's just that they're not modern, and my thought is to put an inside storm on there to add another layer of dead air. Does that make sense? Do people still do that or not?
So, Steve, great question. Inside storms are something that can be very effective to basically install something that is reusable. You know, I'm sure most of our listeners will remember, and some of us still may apply, the plastic that you stick up on the inside of your window in the winter.
And then air blower.
Yeah, so it'll shrink and give you a nice tight seal from over the entire window unit. And it's often stuck on to the wood trim that goes around the window. And so the inside storm window is an attempt to do something that's a little bit more friendly to work with and doesn't leave a sticky residue on your trim. Sometimes those are actually held into place with magnets or a slight magnetic catch on the perimeter. Sometimes they're held in with clips and a more standard, just a felt weather stripping. But the idea is that particularly on the top floor of a building, but even in a ranch home, the main floor is the top floor. The airflow in a home is such that the house will pull in air at the lower level and expel air up at the top. That's called the stack effect. And so if you put your storm window on the inside, that's the best place to have it, because you don't want air to be moving through the opening. But if you were to put the storm on the outside, and many of us have storms already on the outside, what we see is that little bit of air that does get beyond will hit that storm window, and it's a cold piece of glass.
Yeah.
It will condense and then form ice and possibly cause other problems. And so having the inside storm helps to mitigate against that problem. You still have to be mindful, though, of that potential, because once you create multiple layers, you're getting more insulation, but then you're also creating temperature differentials, which is what gives you the insulation. But if humidity is escaping out, you can have problems with moisture. So you just have to be mindful of those things to make sure you're not fixing one problem and causing another.
Yeah. I can remember using that plastic product on a farm home that I lived in quite a few years ago. It made a heck of a difference.
Oh, yeah.
Made a huge difference. And so the inside storms are going to make probably equally good, I would think.
It can be a great way to go. I mean, we've had some clients that we've helped them with that, and it seems to be very effective. You know, the only issue is you have to store them in the off season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and putting them in and taking them out. And so we got a lot of windows. That's an issue. Steve, thanks. Good question. Appreciate your call. We have Marcus in Milwaukee up next. Marcus, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks, Larry. Real quick about the windows, a product I like to use with my customers is the cord weather strip rope caulk for around the windows. To get the sticky stuff off, if you do use plastic, use Ronsonol lighter fluid on a paper towel and just gently rub it. Usually takes it right off. But what I was calling to say is a customer of mine, I'm not sure what the name of the product was or where they got it. It looks like a 5-gallon, like Home Depot type paint pail. Except that you attach the dryer ducting to the top of it just for winter, and so you can plug the exterior hole on your house with a cap. And so then when you're running loads of laundry, you're actually pumping out the hot air into the basement, and then the 5-gallon bucket acts as the lint trap. It's just not recommended for use with gas appliances just because of the carbon monoxide factor.
Correct. So thanks for the call, Marcus. You're right. I was going to mention the issue with the natural gas. If you do have an electric dryer, you certainly could do this. And again, I say could because it just, as is the case with almost any retrofit, you might have unintended consequences. Typically, our homes in the wintertime dry out because the house is leaky and the cold air that's outside has almost no potential to hold moisture. So that's very dry air. And it comes into the home and it dries out the home. And so using this device would pump that moisture back into the house and potentially be a great solution. Rather than running a humidifier, you dry your clothing and you pump that moisture back into the home. It's just, I would say anyone who, no matter what you have, whether it's a humidifier on your furnace or this sort of a device, we all have to monitor the conditions and make sure that the humidity is in a safe zone, which typically would be between, say, 35 and 50%. Ideal humidity is right around the 35 to 40%. Often for both the health of the occupants and the longevity of the building itself. So that's a great thing to potentially consider. But again, the caveat, you would never want to use this device on a natural gas or combustion appliance.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Marcus. Appreciate your call. Debbie emailed to ask what it might cost to make an existing home passive. Man, I would guess that depends on a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. But what are the things that, what are you, what are your thoughts on that, Christy Weber?
Yeah, well, it's very difficult to say what the cost was. I mean, as you said, Larry, it depends on so many things, what types of materials you're using, what your location is, how big the house is, et cetera. But the considerations would be, what do you have for existing insulation? What is the opportunity for adding insulation? For example, do you have existing siding that you are already intending to replace? If you are going to replace the siding, that would be your opportunity to take the siding off and add a large amount of insulation to the exterior of your home before installing new siding. If you don't have the opportunity to be replacing your siding, or let's say you just replaced it, or you like the existing, you might look at opportunities for adding insulation to the interior. So that would be a very specific question about the home under consideration. The other thing to consider would be, and we've talked about this several times already on this show, is as you're tightening up the home, what you need to be able to provide some source of fresh air. So what is the existing system that you have in your home? What is the opportunity for retrofitting it to have an energy recovery ventilator and provide fresh air? So those are just two examples of many considerations that you would think about when you're retrofitting an existing home to be passive.
Makes good sense. Thanks for that question, Deb. James in Kenosha will give you a chance. Hi, James.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'd like to know about the low-E coating. It affects houseplants.
Low-E coating and its effect on houseplants.
I can't say that I know a whole lot about this. I do have an existing client that is looking at adding a sunroom, and she's looked into it just a little bit, and she's expressed the desire to get a higher solar heat gain coefficient and potentially not utilize the low E coating because of the effect it could have on plants. But beyond that, I'm not really sure.
I have limey. My lime tree sits in the bedroom in a south-facing window, and it seems to do pretty well. Although I've supplemented it with some additional lighting that is designed for house plants, and there must be 50 limes on her right now, so. It's doing okay anyway. But it is a good question, and I think you're right. I think it does have an impact. Mm-hmm. It does have an impact on the houseplants. And if you've got a lot of them, it may mean supplementing with some other lighting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there you go. Thank you so much for calling. James, appreciate it very much. You can join in, too. Some open lines get you on pretty quickly. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. Sarah in Middleton up next. Let's go there. Hi, Sarah.
Hello. So my question is, I have a 16-year-old house, and I get a lot of moisture on the windows. In the winter, I was told that, like you just mentioned, the 40% humidity, so I have a dehumidifier that I try to keep it at 40. I finally just recently got it down to 40%. But I'm wondering if the other contributing factor is that I do rely on a sump pump, and so I'm guessing that there's a lot of moisture around the foundation of my home. I have some deterioration along the wood frame of the windows where the moisture collects. Is there anything else I can do to mitigate this? Because it's damaging the windows and
sure.
It's difficult.
So thanks for the call. This is a common issue that many homeowners see, particularly in homes that are built that are about the age of your home. Is there any sort of vent that runs intermittently or continuously up at the top floor of the home?
Like a bath fan.
Well,
it's a
one-story home with a couple bedrooms and a bath in the lower level.
Okay.
Is there a fan? I have a fan in my master bath. It doesn't run continuously. I run it when I'm showering.
Okay. Well, so one way to help mitigate this problem is to install a high-efficiency bath fan, basically, that is designed for continuous operation. And there are a number of fans like that out there. Panasonic is the brand that we're most familiar with, and that it's kind of an industry-leading brand in helping to solve these sorts of ventilation problems in homes. And these fans are designed, it's often a direct current motor. It's very efficient to operate it, very low-cost operation. And they're also, like I say, it's a fan that's actually designed to run continuously. And having something like that installed that would either run continuously or be on a timer so that it is just constantly turning on and turning off might help to mitigate this problem. The other thing that you point out is that there could be some other moisture being generated in the home. Do you have a lot of house plants?
No, not
okay.
a lot.
Okay. Do you have pets?
I have a dog, yeah.
Okay. You know, living things generate moisture. And so that's, and obviously we want our home to be accommodating to all the living things that we want to have in the home. But the more living things we have, the more ventilation we're going to need to keep the air quality in check. Your dehumidifier, is that down in the basement?
Correct.
Okay. So, you know, by adding a relatively, you know, low CFM fan upstairs, that might help provide some additional balance to the overall system in the home. And draw some of the air out continuously, and then the dehumidifier can work down in the basement if that's where the source is. I would recommend setting up. How many little hygrometers do you have around the home to monitor the humidity level, the relative humidity?
Just the one on the dehumidifier.
Okay. So I would recommend picking up a couple. They're low cost. You can pick them up at a home improvement store or hardware store. They're little desktop hygrometers, and they'll give you a reading on temperature and relative humidity. They'll let you know what the peak levels have been. That way you can get a better sense of what's going on in other rooms in the house. And then you might want to talk ultimately to an HVAC, you know, a heating and ventilation specialist on installing some sort of fan up on the main level that would help to further reduce this problem.
Yeah.
And then the only other thing I would say is that sometimes the window treatments on the windows will be contributing to that moisture. And as much as we want to close the window treatments and therefore make the room more comfortable, what that does is that cools down the air right on the glass. And then the moisture in the air is still going to get to the glass. And so we can see more condensation when the window is covered. So you might play around with that a little bit as well.
That can especially occur in bedrooms when you're sleeping at night. You know, you're giving off all of this moisture. So it, obviously you want your window coverings closed at night, but perhaps try to remember during the day to open them up and let those windows dry out if there is any condensation on them.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you so much for that call. Appreciate it very much. Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build, he owns Chad's Design Build, as a matter of fact. Christy Weber is a project design manager for TDS Custom Construction of Madison. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look today at keeping your home comfortable during the winter season. Larry Mueller here with my guests, Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build of Madison and Monona. Christy Weber, a project design manager for TDS Custom Construction of Madison. So great to have them both here.
I believe our lines are pretty well filled. I guess there may be one open for you at 800-642-1234. You can always email us at ideas@wpr.org. And we'll go to Lucas in Waukon, Iowa next. Hi, Lucas.
Hey there. How's everybody today?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm building another high-efficiency passive home. I lived in one and loved it, and I'm building another currently. I like steel and aluminum siding, but I don't really like the looks of the classic horizontal lap siding. Is there any kind of steel or aluminum siding that's going to seal up tight?
I guess I can't say that there's a siding that would seal up tight for you. I would focus on the other elements of the wall system for sealing up a wall and making an airtight envelope. Because, you know, the siding is so far outboard, that's really not its purpose. Its main purpose is to protect the wall system underneath it and to be able to shed water properly.
So do a good job with the what's on the other side of the siding, I guess is what you're saying?
That is what I'm saying.
All right. Lucas, does that help?
Yeah, I guess that'll have to do.
Okay, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Josh in Cataract, we'll go to you next. Hi, Josh.
How you doing, Larry?
Good, appreciate the call.
Hey, I've got a brand new house. It's only a couple years old. The house was built with spray foam in the basement and upstairs on the second story or the first story. I've got a moisture problem somewhere. I know the house was built with former drain around the house. I do not have eaves troughs on the house yet. I've got three kids and a shower in the basement, obviously. I've been running the bath fan continuously, and I've also got a zoned HVAC system. But to my surprise, I put a hygrometer in the basement. We had a relative humidity of 70%.
Ooh,
wow.
So
you don't want that.
Yeah. So, you know, one thing that I'll just take the opportunity to point out is that, you know, the great thing about making a house tighter is that it tends to be more energy efficient. But that's why we have to do these things to both control humidity and to ventilate them. Now that we've made houses comfortable and tight and more energy efficient. And so what you're probably going to need to consider is a high-efficiency whole-house dehumidifier for your lower level. And this is an appliance that has become more common because it's something that that a modern building often needs. Many of us just pick up it used to be you'd pick up that little portable dehumidifier at a home improvement store or a hardware store, and you would plug that in, and maybe it would be a 50-pint or a 70-pint unit, and you would empty the container. A little humidifier like that, or dehumidifier, excuse me, is not going to keep your home as dry as it should be. And so there are a couple of companies out there that make these larger dehumidifiers. The dehumidifiers often cost upwards of $1,000, maybe more, but they're going to be less expensive to operate, and they're going to remove much more moisture out of the air and really keep your house more comfortable. And, you know, you'll avoid mold and other issues that you don't want to have in your home. When I'm going to have to look up those companies. I'm drawing a blank right now, but there is a company.
Santa Fe. Mm-hmm.
Santa Fe. Thank you. Yes, yep. That's one of the companies out there is called Santa Fe. There is a company based in Madison which builds these high efficiency dehumidification systems. But we can provide you with some of that information off air, and we may even mention it on air a little later. But that's a great way to go. And sometimes those are actually hooked in with your heating system, and they sometimes will even bring the fresh air that is connected to your heating system and pull it through the dehumidifier so that in the summer months you've got added, you know, dehumidification, pre-dehumidification of that air before it gets put into the larger system.
Oh, so. Cool. Josh, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Let's go to Tom in Milwaukee. Your turn. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I guess my question is similar to the previous caller's. My daughter and son-in-law bought a house in Minneapolis and just had mold remediation done where they essentially gutted the entire basement.
Yeah.
And they had a sauna, partial sauna. When they removed that, between the sauna and the floor joists is where the majority of the mold was occurring. But now that they've removed everything, they're running a dehumidifier, like a, probably a 50-pint dehumidifier, and their basement is still very, very humid, while the first and second level have like 25% humidity. One of the things that they have is they don't have any cold air returns in the basement. They do have heating vents, but not cold air returns.
And so, Tom, is the humidity level still high in the winter down in the basement?
Yes, they just bought it, and this work was done, but correct. It is very high right now.
Okay. So I think I would have a similar recommendation. A whole house dehumidifier should be installed. And then it could be that there are other sources of moisture that might be mitigated with a combination of landscaping and the eaves troughs and how that water is being diverted. Because a previous caller had said something about not having eaves troughs. And of course, we always we typically, when we're trying to solve a problem, we start at the top of the house and we work our way down. And so when you've got moisture in the basement, of course, there could just be a high water table. Most of us right now in Wisconsin are experiencing very high water table levels off the charts, really. And so that could be the simple explanation that none of us can really do anything about other than have good systems in the home to mitigate until the water table goes down. But if every time it rains, moisture is collecting around the foundation, it would be good to find ways to also help alleviate that problem, if that's part of it.
I also would add that, I mean, you might be onto something with not having a cold air return in the basement. And I would say for both you, Tom, and for Josh, the previous caller, it might, in addition to looking at the dehumidifier option, it might be worth looking at whether or not there's an energy recovery ventilator installed. And perhaps consider, especially if you already have a forced air system, maybe adding that to the mix. Because I have seen houses that, you know, they were okay to begin with, and then they were really tightened up, and people were relying on a bath fan, thinking that that would be enough, but then realizing that there simply just still wasn't enough airflow moving through the house. And that might also assist with some of the high humidity levels in a basement and elsewhere in the home.
Sure. That makes sense. Thanks, Tom, for calling. Rick in South Range, hello.
Hi. Thanks for the program. It's very interesting, but a little perplexing. I had a Focus on Energy audit done up here in northwest Wisconsin a good number of years ago, and I was advised to get that warm, moist air out of your bathroom, out of the shower room, and don't offload that nice, warm, moist air from the dryer into the house, because something is really evil about warm, moist air in the winter. And I always found that to be kind of a contradiction in logic. Do you have any thoughts on this?
Well, with the time we have remaining, and we may have to answer after the break.
We still got a little time.
Okay. You're right. there are competing interests here, and we do want to generally remove the source of humidity. So when you're taking a shower and you've got water dripping on the walls and dripping on the mirrors and things like that, you know, that is a sign that we've got too much humidity in that room, and we're wanting to expel that humidity. When you have an ERV system and it's installed when a building is constructed, a lot of times they'll pull the exhaust right into that system from those vents. So it's all integrated. You know, so homes, when you get into retrofitting an existing structure, there are certain things that are harder to do that you might do when you build it initially, if that makes sense. So you are correct that we generally do not want to be dumping moisture into homes. The reason, though, that many of us have humidifiers on our old furnaces is that our house was leaky, and we had to add humidity back when houses are leaky. And now that building science has changed and houses are much tighter, now we're stuck removing humidity. So that's
there we go. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll take a quick break to look at the news, the weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. Then we'll be back with Chad Spate and Christy Weber. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at home improvement on the show today, Larry Mueller here, and great to have back Chad Spate of Chad's Design Build, and with us as well, Christy Weber, a project design manager for TDS Custom Construction of Madison. So great to have both of them with us. We've zeroed in a bit on keeping your home comfortable. We could take some other questions as well. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. We had an email from Joan. Her fireplace lets in lots of cold air when there's no fire in it. A couple of people have come to look at it, but no one has any suggestions. And I'm not sure. I'm guessing that it is not a gas fireplace, but maybe it is, Chad.
Yeah. Probably not. But even if it were, so one of the issues will. It sounds like it's not a sealed unit, and so what she might consider doing is looking at retrofitting the firebox in a way that makes it so that whatever's burning, whether it's wood or gas, that it's in a mostly sealed box, and then the heat is either blown out or radiates into the home without necessarily just having an open fireplace, which is what we used to have, but increasingly that's not what you end up with in a modern building. And it's for the same reasons, frankly, that we have to dehumidify a modern home, whereas we used to humidify an old leaky home. That old leaky home was very hospitable to an open fireplace because there was all sorts of fresh air to feed the fire.
Makes sense.
Most of us nowadays, if we have a wood-burning fireplace, we have to open a door or window on a lower level so that there's air to feed the fire. And so it doesn't backdraft into our homes. And that is a sign that the old fireplace design is not compatible with the new building design and the way that the building functions as a system. So I think there are probably some good retrofit units that could be installed there that would help allow her fireplace to function better.
Yeah, makes good sense. Ben in Lancaster, we'll go to you next. Hi, Ben.
Yes, hi. Thank you. My question is related to the Panasonic high-efficiency bathroom fan that Chad mentioned. We had one installed 3-4 years or so ago. It's on a smart switch that runs it a few minutes every hour. and then for an hour after every time we turn it on for actually exhausting humid air. And now it's taken to kind of a whistling noise, and I'm wondering if he knows of any way of lubricating that to get rid of the squeal or the whistle.
Thanks for the call, Ben. So I don't think that you'll be able to lubricate. That is a sealed motor, and it. So there are two things that I can think of that might explain that. One is that the motor itself could be failing, and there could be a problem. And I suspect that Panasonic will make good on that. I think there's a pretty lengthy warranty on that fan motor. So I would recommend either reaching out to the contractor or to Panasonic directly to see if that is an option. But it could also be that there's something restricting the airflow. And whenever you have air moving at a pretty good rate, once things change or restrict that flow, you can end up with some interesting sounds. And so the fan might be moving the air, but something has changed in the duct, and that could be the other explanation. So I think you might need to dig into that a little more, unless there's more information you could share, but I probably would have to see it to even have a better sense as well of what's really going on.
But there's a couple of options there.
A couple of possibilities, yeah, both of which could probably be resolved.
All right, there we go. Ben, thank you so much for calling. Verge in Door County. Verge Temme in Door County.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
Good to hear your voice.
Yours, too. Hey, I've got a question for Christy. Now, Christy is a certified passive house consultant, and this is a question I've long been wanting to ask her. On remodeling an older house, say a 20-year-old house that has a lot of exterior detail, you know, beautiful eave work, carved eaves, and that sort of stuff, where you don't really want to put insulation on the exterior of the house to augment your insulation, what are your recommendations? How do we go about insulating to the interior so we know we're doing it the right way?
Well, I would say that it really depends. That's kind of my standard answer for a lot of these questions. But it really depends on, I think, what your energy goals are, wouldn't you say? If you want to go all the way to, you know, a super insulation level, I might think about, you know, packing out the inside of those walls with maybe do a second wall and do like a double stud construction and fill that thing with cellulose. But also in the past, I've seen and done just an additional layer of foam on the inside of the wall. And of course, you know, Verge, that it's really important to consider the vapor profile of that wall. We don't want warm, moist air condensing on a surface anywhere in that wall. So when doing anything like that, we need to be looking at, one, our overall energy goals and insulation goals, and two, the vapor profile of the wall.
So you can actually... What would you do with the just putting something right on the wall itself, you're saying?
I think that if I were to do something really simple and I wasn't going to be going up to like a 10 or 12 inch thick wall, I would probably want to remove the drywall, remove the plaster, fill the wall with something like a dense pack cellulose insulation, and then consider putting some sort of sheet good like an EPS foam 1 to 2 inches on the inside of that wall. But you have to be careful about the density, because now you're going to be putting drywall over it, and you need to be able to screw through that EPS and or the foam insulation and get all the way to the stud so that you're not losing your drywall off the wall.
Yeah, there we go. Verge, does that help?
It does. I'm dreaming of doing that to my own house. and just wanted to run that by Christy to make sure I was doing it right.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. All right. Well, let's take another caller. Teresa in Mineral Point. It's your turn. Hi, Teresa.
Hi. Hi.
Hello. What can we do for you?
I'm listening to your radio station, and I had a comment for the lady who was asking about leaky water on their windowsills, on the windows. I clean houses for a living, and so I've seen many of these. And the best and simplest and, I mean, easiest, cheapest way to do that is people put a small fan. They just blow it right on the window sill where the water comes in, and that keeps it dry. They just leave it running nonstop, and that way it doesn't get so much mold on their wood wood window sills.
Yeah,
that's a great suggestion, Teresa. Thank you for the call. And that is sometimes what we end up deciding to do with our clients who we're consulting with on a problem like this. The only issue there is, let's say the house has 20 windows and there are 10 areas that are problematic. If you're running 10 fans, and then we get back to a discussion about energy consumption and comfort, then the issue becomes, well, is that actually an efficient way to keep the house functioning? But you're absolutely right that air movement will resolve the condensation issue in most cases.
Yeah, and if you've only got it on a few windows, it's okay. Teresa, thanks. Appreciate the call. Well, let's take another call. Lori in Rice Lake. It's your turn. Hi, Lori.
Hi, Larry. Hi. Yes, I have a sealed sprayed house with a fireplace that it circulates. It brings cold air into the fireplace. So that part is taken care of. But I do have an air exchange. And I'm wondering, how do I work that air exchange in the wintertime? And what temperature do I set it on?
So you're, I'm trying to fish, maybe Chad, you.
So there is a control switch for the air exchange. And of course, different models have different switches and different ways of operating. So that it's a little bit hard to know exactly what your air exchange control looks like. But typically you'll experiment with the setting on it, and by monitoring humidity in the home, you can see how effectively it's maintaining some balance. So I would say that you're typically going to want to be using it, particularly if you're having any of the sorts of issues we've been talking about today, like condensation on windows and or high humidity levels. And air exchangers are designed for tight homes, and tight homes tend to have excess humidity. And they also tend to need fresh air for the occupant. So I would say you're going to want to make sure that it is operating. I'll also mention that there is a filter in that system that does need to be routinely cleaned and or changed. And just like with a furnace filter. So there is some maintenance that comes with this appliance. And hopefully that has answered your question.
And so if you're in a moisture situation and you're fooling around with the air-to-air heat exchanger, is there a direction you'd go one way or the other?
So typically, if you're having humidity problems, you're going to operate it more, because it's going to help mitigate that humidity problem.
So you just play around with it a little bit, just to operate, make it more, and then just see how that's working out. You may have to increase it, or maybe just drop it back a notch.
Correct.
Yeah. There we go. Lori, thanks. Appreciate the call. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Ed in Port Washington. Hi, Ed.
Hi, Larry. How's it going today?
Pretty well. Thanks for calling. What can we do for you today?
Okay, I've got an issue. I have a small home with a partial basement and two separate crawl spaces that go off of that. And all the things I've been looking at as far as encapsulation goes, they show doing the floor and up the block walls to the box sill. But I was wondering if it'd be possible just to do a 12 mil poly. It has dirt and then pea gravel over the dirt. It just did a 12 mil poly and then sealed it against the foundation at the bottom and then did a one inch rigid foam and adhered it to the block and up into the block sill, if that would be sufficient.
Great questions, Ed. So you can certainly put down a 10 mil or thicker barrier over the soil, and the odds are good that that's not going to get punctured. One of the things we always have to be concerned about is that when we install these systems or materials, that if they're compromised, then we no longer have what we thought we were providing to fix a problem in the home. So that's why often when we put down the poly, we might want to protect it if there's, you know, if there are things that need to be serviced in that crawl space, or if you're storing things in the crawl space. But if it's an out of sight, out of mind space, you could put down that poly, and then you could seal it to the foundation wall and then insulate up that wall. Generally, best practice is to insulate the ground and insulate the sidewalls up into the box sill so that the insulation is contacting the subfloor. And then the floor joists themselves are just left exposed, and that crawl space becomes essentially a conditioned space. So that's what we're shooting for as a goal, and there are a variety of ways to get to that.
Interesting. Does that help, Ed?
Yes, but you do recommend insulating the floor as well.
If you can, it doesn't hurt, but it's not, I mean, it's like everything else. There's a limit to how much you may want to spend to do certain things, and certainly putting down an appropriate vapor barrier that's going to deal with moisture and potentially radon if you have it. Those are the two big things that we get to address with that vapor barrier on the ground. And that's the first step you'd want to take, definitely.
All right. Thank you so much, Ed, for calling. Appreciate it. And Nicole in Stevens Point. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I live in a 1960s-era standard ranch home. It has a boiler system, so there's no ductwork. There's one wall air conditioner, but it doesn't do a whole lot. And we have a lot of condensation on our windows, especially in our bedrooms. We run a dehumidifier, but it gets kind of bulky and kind of loud. Is there any other ideas or things that we could do that might help this situation? It's just really bad. We've had some molding issues. We've replaced trim in the bedroom because of it.
How old is the home, Nicole?
1960s.
Okay.
Not quite 1,700 square feet.
Okay.
The main floor, full basement, unfinished full basement.
And do you ever see water in the basement, or is it just a high humidity level?
It's just a high humidity level. It's in town, so we don't have a sump pump or anything. And it doesn't, we never have a problem with, we run a dehumidifier in the summertime in the basement.
Right. And the humidity problem is year round?
Yeah. So it's in the basement. It's in the basement, the lower level, although it's not as bad. We don't get condensation in the basement like we do upstairs or on the main floor in the wintertime.
Okay.
There will be several. There's at times when it's really cold, we can have actually water running down our windows.
Oh, that's a lot.
Wow.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. And there's only, you know, three people and a dog living in there. So it's not.
Well, it does sound like, you know, a lot of moisture is coming into the home somehow. And it could very easily just be wicking through the foundation and the cement floor. And we've talked previously on the show today about some high efficiency whole house dehumidification systems, and that might be a good solution based on what you've said. It's unlikely that a 1960s ranch is so tight that you need fresh air, makeup air, that would be part of the energy recovery ventilation system or the heat recovery ventilation system that we've also talked about. I think it sounds like you just need a really good dehumidifier. And the nice thing about a whole house unit is it is going to be much quieter, and it's going to cost much less to operate, particularly for each, you know, pint of water that you're removing from the air. It could be, though, based on everything you're describing, that some additional ductwork might be desirable in the home. And I'm thinking about the potential of, you know, drawing air from the top level and pulling it down into the dehumidifier, since you have radiators, so you're not recirculating air in your home. It could be that you're a candidate for some sort of a system that does a little bit more to circulate the air and thus dehumidify the air on all levels. Because if we just dehumidify the basement, I'm not sure that's going to fix the problem you're seeing on the windows.
And also, Nicole, I would echo what Chad has said earlier in the show about bath fans. I imagine you probably have, with that size of house, at least a couple of bathrooms. And investigating, you know, what the capacity is of your current bath fans, how old they are, if they need cleaning, perhaps they need to be replaced with something that does have continuous exhaust air to draw that moisture out of the house. And then thinking about just what the different sources of moisture might be in your house. You know, are you cooking a lot? Do you have a gas stove? Are you using your range hood when you do cook? Are you utilizing your bath fan every time, you know, you take a shower, things like that.
So lots to think about there, Nicole. And just one other quick note, probably wouldn't work in her case, but Dennis sent an email. He uses an air purifier to blow on windows when they have condensation, and that way he's doing two things at once.
Great idea.
That is a very, very cool idea.
Brilliant.
Thank you. And Nicole, thank you so much for calling. Chad, you've got a website, right?
We do. It's chadsdesignbuild.com.
Chadsdesignbuild.com. And TDS Custom Construction?
We also have a website. It's tdscustomconstruction.com.
TDS Construction.
CustomConstruction.com.
Why can't I get
it's
that?
It's a mouthful.
TDS Custom Construction. Well, I want to thank you both for being with us today. It was a lot of fun. I answered a lot of questions. I learned some things, and I bet all our listeners did as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Larry.
Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build, Christy Weber of TDS Custom Construction, our guest today. Oh, man. Tomorrow it's Garden Talk time, and UW Extension horticulturist Kevin Schesso will be back to talk about organic vegetable research trials and take your gardening questions. That's tomorrow on the Ideas Network. By the way, full disclosure, we should mention that Chad's Design Build is one of WPR's many business sponsors, and we appreciate that as well. And I certainly appreciate you listening in. It's great to have you listening in, and thanks for all your questions. And you know what? You should stay with us, because there's lots more in store right through the afternoon here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mila.